I declare the meeting open at 4 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. I request that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation, and this place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the council business team after the meeting. The agenda comprises one report from management. No apologies have been received. Given that this is a special meeting of the council in accordance with section 84.4 of the Local Government Act 1989, unless all councillors are present and unanimously agree to deal with another matter, only the business specified in the notice is to be transacted. Extraordinary circumstances have prevented council from giving public notice at least 7 days before the special meeting, due to the meeting only being called last Friday on the 9th of March 2018. If any councillor has either direct or indirect interest as defined in Local Government Act 1989 in relation to the matter to be considered by council, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of the item. The following submission has been received in accordance with Council's Meeting Procedures Code in relation to Agenda Item 3.1, the update on the investigation into allegations regarding the former Lord Mayor Robert Doyle, an item of correspondence from Anthony van der Kratz. There is one report from management for consideration, that is Agenda Item 3.1, the update on the investigation into allegations regarding the former Lord Mayor Robert Doyle, and I call on Ben Rimmer, our Chief Executive Officer, to make a brief presentation.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor and councillors. As councillors know, the first report of the Freckleton investigation was received on Sunday. The report makes 4 adverse findings. Those findings are very serious. They relate to conduct that is inconsistent with the values of the organisation and of the city. I'm today providing to council and through council to the public a summary of that report. In view of its sensitive content, I've provided this to councillors on a confidential basis until this point. I'm now tabling the management report with the summary attached in public session. I commend the management report for council consideration.
Thank you, Ben. I'll now move a motion, a slightly amended motion to that of the officer recommendation. If we scroll down, just give everyone a chance to read that. And I'll reserve my right to speak, and I call on a councillor to second the motion, Councillor Rees, and I now call on Councillor Oak to address the meeting.
I wasn't quite ready, you know, it's been a bit of a rush day. I'll do as I did last time and read from a statement and hope to get to the end. Okay. It's been very rushed today. Anyway, okay, so last time I spoke publicly on this matter, I did so with fear of disrupting an incredibly important investigation, fear of being back at Town Hall, and mostly, as I am now, with extreme sadness that we're in the situation in the first place. I acknowledge that this investigation might have made a significant contribution towards changing the way local government protects those of us who choose to serve our communities. I know that there is still a long way to go. And this is what I do want to talk about tonight. So now that the report is in, or the interim report is in, I want the organisations and individuals tasked with supporting the local government sector to bring their heads out of the sand and take this situation seriously. I am, of course, not referring to the Australian Local Government Women's Association, who have been tirelessly working to improve pathways for women into councils and to support them once they are elected. And I will give the benefit of the doubt for not hearing from any of them yet. However, I will find it unacceptable if the MAV, the VLGA, the state government and all political parties wanting to elect people to councils if they aren't willing to really think about what they as organisations need to do to better support anyone who is a victim of harassment in their workplace. I've been a councillor for 10 years. Why is that? That's the hardest part. Sorry. And I know how hard the gig is for a range of reasons. But the last few months have really highlighted another rather serious reason why public life can be difficult for women. For a mother with daily school responsibilities, and for someone without significant resources to defend myself or high-profile connections to advocate on my behalf. We need our political workplaces to not only encourage a diversity of candidates to put their hand up to be elected, we need to have robust policy arguments and ideological debates, but we also need to encourage speaking out and provide support to people regardless of which side of the numbers that you're on. And I know that power and powerful connections loom large in this sorry saga. Women don't speak out because we fear that if the wrong person is unwittingly spoken to, it could mean a leak, a breach of confidentiality, a breach of trust, and ultimately information in the hands of their accused and their powerful networks. I had a real fear of speaking to someone or people in powerful connected networks, and this isn't just about this saga, but I do have a fear of talking to people who are powerfully connected in the city on this matter, knowing or believing that it would lead to a media smear or attack on my reputation. And that might sound ridiculous to some, but that fear was real and paralysing. This isn't about stopping political reporting. This isn't about stopping attacks on policy or political foes. It's not about attacking me on bicycle lanes. It's about ethics and it's about what is right and wrong. And for the most part, that is what I want to change and what I want to look to after this. We, as councillors, have agreed to review our code of conduct, and that process is underway. I've tried to instigate a process whereby we as councillors can try to work through this situation as a team, away from the politics, to concentrate on the fact that we are people. And as I said last time I spoke publicly, the debate needs to shift to how to create a political environment where we can still look after people. Achieving cultural change in an environment where political debate is essential to achieving policy change is, of course, difficult. You know, we need more women in local government for diversity of voice and approach, but change can't only be on the shoulders of women to make it happen. Yes, I wish I had done some things differently. And yes, I have a role to play in bringing that change about. However, I want everyone in politics today, either elected or in the administration, to be thinking, how do I help to reinforce acceptable standards, better training and support structures? I call on the state government to seriously consider an independent committee or person to receive complaints, either statewide, regionally, or as a requirement for each council. And the Local Government Act and all codes of conduct and councillor induction should include a mandatory training on acceptable behaviour in the workplace. And we need to make sure that sexual harassment is clearly defined as a serious or gross misconduct in the Local Government Act. In this day and age, I should have known who to speak to and feel confident to do so. And coming forward, I should be safe in knowing that there was a process I could trust and that the situation could be dealt with appropriately. And there wasn't, and that's why I do support the process that we've been through and that is, you know, we're receiving a report on tonight. I was very sad that Tessa said that she was actively encouraged to not collaborate or talk to me, and that meant she couldn't reach out to me for so long. I'd like to think that we could all act differently in here. I accept who has the majority and who is in numbers, but I would like to think we could also accept that we need to own the responsibility to look after each other as humans too, and to call out behaviour that crosses the political line into the personal. I'm not naive. I know that this is a very difficult line to define in politics. And I am, of course, deeply ashamed that despite being a smart, driven woman and one who would normally call out bad behaviour and have certainly reported inappropriate behaviour in the past, that I didn't stand up. I've done my best as one of the two Greens on council to effect positive policy change for our city in a collaborative way. I didn't stand up when I experienced inappropriate behaviour because, rightly or wrongly, I was fearful that I couldn't continue to be effective in my role. I accept this and own it, but I am ashamed about this. That is as far as I have been able to articulate why I haven't been able to defend why I didn't or say something. And in situations like this, I would tell any other woman and my daughter to do something about it or to talk about it. Today, and this is the bit that's made me cry, I missed out on my daughter's art class. I didn't walk home with her. The last few months have been very hard. But I am proud of the fact that Tessa, Carla, and I have and did speak up. And that we've spoken up where many others can't. I hope that I'm not being too naive in wanting my daughter to grow up in a post-Me Too era when speaking out doesn't cause so much pain, where political games and machinations can still operate, but with the view that people can expect to be safe and free from harassment when going about the halls of power. And as I said last time, there is a responsibility on all of us to recognise where power lies and to foster a healthy workplace for everyone aligned with the values that we all hold as important and that our community would expect. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. I know you've found that really tough, but you did such a great job. I just want to reflect on that. Obviously, there were four adverse findings in the report that was delivered to us today, the summary report, and that has been difficult for councillors to read. And so here we are in this forum after hearing from Councillor Oak, who has bravely spoken today first. So I felt that as a council that we needed to respond, and I have the full support of my colleagues in the addition of 8.3, which I will read probably not as well as Councillor Oak actually just delivered her opening remarks. Council deplores violence against women in all of its forms. As councillors, we're deeply concerned about the findings of the independent investigation, which concerns our workplace and colleagues. As a council, we are united in ensuring such behaviour does not occur again. Further, we are hopeful that this difficult period for the city can serve as an example to other organisations and pave the way for significant reform, particularly for the workplace safety for councillors across Victoria. We value gender equality and we want our city to remain as a leader to its community and to all of its visitors. It is important that all women are encouraged to speak out and that councillors have a workplace where they are safe to do their jobs. We've previously agreed to review our councillor code of conduct to ensure allegations of this nature are dealt with appropriately. We support management's review of all relevant administrative policies referencing councillors, including and in particular the alcohol and drug policy. We also support management's productive discussions with the Victorian Government about improvements to the Local Government Act 1989 for dealing with allegations of this nature across the sector. Our primary aim is to deliver great outcomes for this wonderful city and its people, and we'll continue to do that. And I know even through this difficult 3 months, which has impacted many people, that the conversations that I've had with my fellow councillors, that I've had with staff at this organisation, have been that this is a really tough time, a time that we need to learn from and to improve our processes, our policies and our procedures, but most of all, to build on the great work that this organisation does every day. On a personal note, I want to say sorry to Cathy and sorry to Tessa, and also to talk about the fact that Cathy identified, or was Councillor Oak, I should say, identified the fact that identifying what we wanted to change as part of this, and that is where our full focus will be, absolutely has been from the moment that we could take action Even before the full report was delivered, we were looking at gaps in our policies and procedures to ensure that we not only learn from this, that we make a better organisation going forward and have a positive impact on the sector that we think delivers so much for the Victorian community. Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I also speak in favour of the motion on the screen, and you know, I guess I want to start by putting on the record that for me too, this has been an absolutely gut-wrenching experience, and I don't think there's probably anyone on this council floor who hasn't been seriously knocked around by what has become known to us all over the last 3 months, but none more so than Councillor Cathy Oak and former Councillor Tessa Sullivan. So I would also like to put on the record my admiration for their bravery in being prepared to stand up and say, me too. That courage, that bravery has made a difference here at the City of Melbourne, and it's going to make a difference well beyond this place. I would also like to note with my personal sadness that this is how the career of Lord Mayor Robert Doyle has come to an end at this place. It should not have ended this way. He's served this city very, very well, but there's no getting around the failings and the behaviour, which is just not acceptable in any circumstances. Everybody deserves to live in a world and a workplace that is free of sexual harassment, but the truth is that there are too many workplaces where what we have come to know in recent times is going on. And so today, I think the City of Melbourne very much is taking a stand, drawing a line in the sand and saying, we're going to build a better city and be an exemplar for all. The report that the executive summary of the report that's been provided by the city summarising the work of Dr. Ian Freckleton has a number of very important findings of fact in them. And there's no getting around those. And it also has a number of very important policy recommendations. And the city will be, I for one as a councillor can say I'll be considering them very, very favourably. As the acting Lord Mayor flagged, there's a code of conduct review, which we've already embarked on. That will be thorough in its nature. Alcohol and drug policy is also will be reviewed. That will be thorough and comprehensive in its nature. And also some of the gaps that frankly exist in our legislative framework. These are the frameworks which are meant to protect us, protect women. They need to be fixed. It's nobody's fault that sexual harassment isn't specifically listed as an example of misconduct under the Local Government Act. But that gap needs to be closed. The Andrews government needs to move to close a gap, and the City of Melbourne will be obviously very, very supportive. We're very proud of everything we do here at the City of Melbourne. We know that we're not the world's most livable city by accident. That has happened because so many of us are so committed to doing everything we can to make this city, you know, that shining light, that example for the world. And being the world's most livable city, being the world's best city, means that there is no place for gender inequality. There is no place for sexual harassment. And we must do everything we can to make it the safe city, full of the safe workplaces that we all deserve. I also want to join the Acting Lord Mayor of saying sorry to Councillor Oak and former Councillor Sullivan for what has occurred. You know, we all go about our busy lives, and maybe sometimes we're not as observant of what's going on around us as perhaps we could be. So I too also say sorry. And I also want to finish by saying change begins with the individual. And, you know, I commit myself to do everything to make the rest of your term here as successful as possible, Kathy. And I want to serve alongside you, not just as a councillor, but as a fellow human being.
Thanks, Councillor Rees. Any other speakers to this item? Councillor Riley.
I don't even know where to begin. As the longest standing female Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillor in this council, I actually feel ashamed that my fellow councillors have had to go through this and that we didn't really know what was going on. And I feel the pain these two women have experienced in the last few months, as have we all, for different reasons. But I can see a way forward with what we're just doing tonight, and I am pleased that the findings have finally been delivered. And I do hope that Kathy and Tessa will be able to continue some sort of normality, which is what they signed up for, not what they've received. And I also believe I can go forward with my colleagues as a united council. We've got, 3 years to run on this term, and let's make it, every one of us, the best term yet. And I do get what we've been talking about with the faults in our code of conduct. And once again, you know, I don't know how it got to this, that we didn't recognise that we were not delivering a good code, but I know we can and we will.
Thanks, Councillor Riley. Any other speakers? Councillor Watts.
Thank you. I want to commend the women for standing up and stepping forward in this difficult time, Tessa and Kathy. And I want to commend Kathy's eloquence in describing this process so well and in a comprehensive way, the difficulties that female councillors on this council have had to attempt to do their work. I am frustrated, frankly, that I've been on this council, I think, 7 years now, and it's not as though the problems with our code have been unknown. I personally experienced problems with our code 6, perhaps 7 years ago. So I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated on behalf of the brave women coming forward recently. I'm frustrated that the process has taken so much out of them and out of the whole council and out of this city. I'm frustrated that because of the various legal constraints and difficulties, we are seeing a summary. I understand fully why this has occurred, but it's my default position that more information is better than less. But the summary outlines the legal position and very well. I am confident that the process has been rigorous. But of course, the scope was always quite specific. I note that matters such as harassment and bullying, which was my particular experience, are often hard to verify, often sit outside that which can be proven, but that does not negate the reality of them. So my frustration will have to be set aside in my optimism that we can do something about this. I am confident that reforms will occur. I am hopeful that my colleagues fully understand what our obligations will be in future and that we can continue our work without being thwarted in unhelpful political manoeuvrings. I'm genuinely pleased that we've been given this opportunity to sort things at the City of Melbourne.
Thanks, Councillor Watts. Any other speakers? Councillor Pinner-Mortimer.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I'd just like to say that I did return to council some 5 or 6 weeks ago because I strongly believed that as a group of councillors, we're able to come together, as Councillor Riley says, in a united way to actually make change and effect change. We've got some great people here who support us every day. We have a great city out there, and as we walk the streets and attend the functions and speak at the events, I can see so much that we've done as a team and as teams in previous terms that have only been great. So I, in my own way, having only been returned 6 weeks, look forward to all of the positive outcomes that will emanate from this process. Deep sadness for Kathy and Tessa, and know that the review of the code of conduct, I'm particularly interested in the alcohol and drug policy and that being reviewed, and look forward to an accelerated path on each of those situations. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Pinner-Mortimer. Any other speakers? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Obviously, my sentiments are shared by my colleagues as well, but I'd like to just add a few brief comments to the record. Over the past 3 months, we've all learned so very much about this place, about each other, and about how power operates. This report and its findings are sobering and serious, and it strikes me that it's quite remarkable, particularly my current and my former colleagues, Councillor Roke and Councillor Sullivan, have what they've had to endure in order to have these allegations go through this particular process, which is now approaching that 3-month stage. I miss Councillor Sullivan's presence on this council. She had a lot to offer this council, which will no longer be able to occur. And as is quite obvious, I regret that she felt the need to resign in order to make her complaints heard. I think that's safe to say now that a finding of fact, which is an adverse finding, is now on the public record. And I've witnessed but not managed to understand the sheer amount of difficulty and pain and challenge and time that my very wonderful friend and colleague, Councillor Oak, has had to endure for more than 3 months. That is something that no one should have to go through. And, of course, there are adverse findings in the report as well. And so for the first time on the public record, I think that we need to acknowledge that this is a completely unacceptable situation for anyone to go through in the workplace. And as my other colleagues have said, it is the time to ensure that nothing like this can ever happen again. As Councillor Oak says, we all need to understand where power lies, our policies, but also, much more importantly, our culture needs to define and govern behaviour that is expected of us by our community. Just as you said, mover and seconder, for my part, like you and like all of us, I am fully committed to ensuring best practice policies and committing to a healthy culture between the 10 of us, which will eventually become 11 again. Because we do need to be leaders in our communities, we do need to make sure that our policies, our code of conduct and our other policies are best practice, and that we're advocating for the improvements to legislation that others have talked about today. I've taken that role in my role at the MAV as well, and have suggested precisely the same improvements to template codes of conduct that are provided to the sector and improvements to legislation that should be advocated for at a sector-wide level, and I'm absolutely committed to that as well. But obviously, as far as the City of Melbourne is concerned, culture comes from the top. We need to lead the way, not just for ourselves, but obviously we do need to make this workplace safe for absolutely everyone. But for the 1,600 staff of this organisation that I am very, very proud to be a part of, and for our 150,000 constituents and all of the residents of the City of Melbourne, the ratepayer community and businesses as well, We have a special role to play. Over the last 3 months, we've not lived up to that expectations that our community has of us. And as others have said, we must ensure that we're doing that in the future. And that is my commitment, as I know it is all of ours.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. Councillor Francis Gilley.
Can I also just really acknowledge Councillor Oak and Tessa Sullivan? You know, I can't imagine how hard it is, and just acknowledge you just right now for being right here and brave and being in the process and guiding us, even as you kind of grapple to find your own ground. Thank you for that. I think there's just a couple of points I'd like to make, really. The first is that during this time there has been kind of criticism, I think, of the process. And I, as somebody who saw this unfold and then thought, what is my responsibility? And as best I possibly could, engaged with the legislation and the books and the codes of conduct to see what I might do and what my responsibilities might have been under such circumstances and how I might act. It was completely unclear, and there were no clear references at all in the Act or in the Code of Conduct in terms of any guidance governing circumstances like this, particularly around sexual misconduct. So it is great that you know, we have already started that process, you know, as Rohan said, with MAV, and also I know with the state government and also our own Code of Conduct, that we've already started the process to ensure that not only in here, in this place, but also in councils around the state, we might improve that. So let's really hold on to that. I know we are all really committed to holding on to that and ensuring those improvements. But we've talked a bit about power and politics, and I think I actually want to talk to the gallery, and particularly those of the press, you know, and I'm not sure that you're meant to. You're not. So I'll make a comment about power, and I'll do it down here, which is that we saw in this process a woman stand up, and shortly after standing up, being on the front of a newspaper in a bikini holding her child. That woman is now clearly innocent. I spoke to her several days after that event, where she was hiding from the reality of the world that she faced. That reality became as big as the fears that she was running on. We doubled instantly the pain on that woman. Now, it's our responsibility to change the processes. It's our responsibility, as you know, you said, Nick, and others have said, to look amongst ourselves and to better care for ourselves and to support the administration on better processes. All those things are right. But collectively, we are trying to hold a great city and people that care for one another. And actually, the press are part of that. They help us to communicate with each other and to share the problems that we face so that we understand them and we can be better people. And actually, if at times that power gets confused and we gang up on the vulnerable, then it is not serving us as a community. So I am really glad that we take responsibility here, but it's our responsibility, not just in here, as a group of citizens that want a great place to live. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Francis Gilley. Any other speakers to this item? Councillor Ely.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. And I just want to put on the record as well my absolute respect for Cathy. She's someone that I've, from the first day I came into this council, provided nothing but sage advice. And many times I've always questioned why you would provide that advice to me, given that we come from, a different political world. But I finally realised it's not about that. It's about, you know, we are in a way a collective family. You know, as soon as one of us hurts, it reflects on all of us. So I just want to pay my respects, I guess, to you. I think I also want to pay my respects to former Councillor Sullivan, who is a very, you know, someone who I got to know very closely. And, you know, and this is, you know, she will be remembered for standing up and taking action. And regardless of what people say about her motives and action, but that she made a change. And that is the key word. She made a change. And I just, you know, no words can really describe the change she will make. You know, when you talk about a teacher's role or influence, you know, because they will teach and their legacy will go on forever, this change will also make a big, big change here, not only in council, but I think also in Victoria. I won't repeat some of the other stuff because I totally agree with everyone, what everyone has said here. But I do want to note that as a result of this, there is a Lord Mayor election. And I really do ask the candidates to reflect on the role. You know, why you want to take this role. What can you bring to the city of Melbourne? You know, when I put my hand up for council for minimum pay and, you know, and long hours, I actually said, you know, because I love Melbourne. But, you know, I asked that, you know, all the candidates that putting their hand up to serve in, you know, in probably one of the very prestigious roles in all of Australia, which is the Lord Mayor of Melbourne, you know, reflect on that role. What can you bring? You know, we are in a place where we need healing and we need leadership. And if you do not have that, I ask that you do not put your hand up because we need leadership right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor. Any other speakers? If not, I'll just make a few brief comments. Thank you to my colleagues for your heartfelt submission to this process. I know it's not been an easy one for all of us and particularly for Councillor Oak. But like my fellow councillors, I genuinely believe that we can get better from this. Organisations all around Australia, in fact all around the world, are dealing with these issues and confronting these issues and learning through the process. It's been hard, the fact that we've had to learn so much and that the processes and pathways weren't exactly there for Councillor Oak and for former Councillor Sullivan. I just want to make a few remarks because it has been an extremely tough process. Councillor Oak talked about how difficult it's been, and I understand the public interest when it involves such a high-profile Melburnian, but the daily updates on this process over the last 3 months have impacted a lot of people, staff, families, and obviously those that have been very much involved in this process. The process was independent, absolutely independent, fiercely independent, conducted by QC Ian Freckleton. We now have a summary of findings, and it is a summary of findings for the various reasons that are outlined in the summary report. And we would just ask, I know it's probably going to fall on deaf ears and probably the public commentary will continue, but there is still an ongoing investigation as part of this in terms of the third complainant. There are people who want to get on with their lives and start to rebuild their lives and start to focus on some of the good things that they wake up for every day. As of now, the summary report will be on the City of Melbourne website, and it is a very detailed account of the adverse findings. There are no winners in this process. I think that's absolutely clear. The impact that this has had on many, many people hasn't just been over the last 3 months. I'm sure that, unfortunately, that some of these impacts will continue for a very long time. How we go forward with this is really, I think, what's going to determine whether we've learnt from the process and whether we can come out the other side better. And I genuinely believe that we can, even in the really difficult circumstances over the last 3 months, and they've been extremely difficult. We've run events, we've processed planning applications, we've even handed out parking fines. We've gone on with the business of council, and I just want to thank my fellow councillors for their goodwill and collaboration in getting behind what I think is a wonderful organisation, and I know that we'll come out the other side better for this. So with that, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. I wish to thank members of the public and management and staff for their interest and attendance, and I declare the meeting closed at 4:40 p.m.